Welcome to the Overeaters Anonymous Steps, Traditions and Concepts workshop sponsored by OA Virtual Region. The speakers are Francine A and Gary D. This workshop took place on Saturday, the 27th of July, 2024.
I came in weighing about 340 pounds. And one quick thing I do want to say, I haven't eaten sugar or any of the things I don't eat since I came in 36 years ago, but I have overeaten. So I've overeaten the foods that I do eat. So in the way I reckon abstinence, I've got about 12 or 13 years of continuous abstinence because I overate. I don't mean like I just overate like an extra green bean, but I gained some weight about 12, 13 years ago. And because this is Overeaters Anonymous and not Sugars Anonymous, I count my abstinence as starting 12 or 13 years ago. Thank you for letting me ramble on so long when time is so valuable here. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. I'm going to start off today just quickly with my intentions for today. So my intention, and Gary's, I'm going to include Gary in this, our intention for this workshop is that each of you learn something that will help you in your recovery and allow you to live the steps, traditions, and concepts in your life each day. Just to give you a little bit of an overview, each one we're going to talk about the concepts, the concept, the tradition, and the step. So concept one is the ultimate responsibility and authority for OA World Services reside in the collective conscience of our OA fellowship, our whole fellowship, spiritual principle unity. Individual members have the final say about World Services and exercise this right through their participation in the decisions reached by their local and virtual groups, service bodies, and World Service. The OA 12 and 12 tells us, in order to reach an informed group conscience, we affirm each group member's right to take part in the discussions to make sure that the decision reached by the group takes into account all pertinent information. That's from page 100. So these are the pieces we're going to connect today. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Concept one, the ultimate responsibility and authority for OA World Services reside in the collective conscience of our whole fellowship. So this first concept about this ultimate authority really confused me at first when I came into OA, because I'd heard also that we ought not to be overly organized. Then all of a sudden, I find out we're supposed to listen to everybody else and make these decisions as a whole in some kind of funny thing called a group conscience. With some kind of other crazy thing called substantial unanimity, which I found out took me forever to pronounce, and a lot of people still can't pronounce. And I thought to myself, what kind of crazy organization is this? And by the way, who the heck is in charge? And I'm supposed to listen to everyone's opinion, even minority opinions? I'm really supposed to listen to all these opinions of other people? Oh, and maybe I'm supposed to revisit that decision if we need to. The example I thought about this was one of the first times I went to the World Service Business Conference, we brought forth a plan of eating pamphlet for consideration. And the first time they used a paid professional to assist us with these eating plans. So it got to World Service and it did not go over well at World Service that year. There was a whole lot of discussion, a whole lot of debate, some of which unfortunately took place in the parking lot. And the only decision that was reached was that no one liked it very much. So then we sent it back and it was worked on by other OA fellows, and groups and intergroups were asked for input. And my intergroup was really excited because they wanted to input their food plan. And it came back later, and there were people who liked the next version and people who didn't. And my group had asked me to speak in favor of it, but I was convinced, because I'd been in OA then maybe about 4 years, and I was convinced if we had these published food plans, that was going to be the end of OA. We were all going to go back to compulsive eating and die. But I had to stand up and speak in favor of it because that was what my group asked me to do. And there were people in World Service Business Conference, we kind of have an aisle down the middle and people on each side. And we have these two microphones and people are on each side, some for what's going on and some against it. But what happened was that year, we actually passed it, even though there was a lot of debate and talk, and even some things that seemed a bit argumentative. But when it got all said and done, and it was adopted, the two sides just kind of met in the middle, and everyone just started hugging each other as we returned back to our seats. And I was just totally amazed, like, look at what happened here. We've made this decision. I myself wasn't sure it was the right decision, but everybody on both sides just came back together and went back to their seats. So I had to learn about being open-minded enough to listen to all the opinions on an issue before making up my mind. And that has just led, in my 21 years in OA, both in service decisions and in individual decisions for me, I've learned that opening my mind and listening and not just insisting that everything go my way, which would have been disastrous, that has really worked out. And I've really learned a lot. And I will say it took a lot for me to learn to be quiet and listen. You know, I liked hearing my own opinion. I like speaking. I like, you know, I learned not to get up there and speak about everything. And I think that this concept goes very nicely with the tradition because it tells me that I must value the common welfare. And I value it by being part of the group conscience. And why? Why do I do that? Because my recovery depends upon it. It really does. So in summary, honesty and unity are the watchwords here. After admitting that we are powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable, it makes sense to learn to depend on the unifying process we call group conscience, rather than allowing differences of opinion to tear our fellowship apart. Open, honest, and respectful debate and discussion allows us to make decisions for the fellowship as a whole. While minority votes are not the same as a final group conscience, it is sometimes necessary to allow interim decisions to be made. They may be revisited until a true group conscience is reached. Okay, and now, any questions on this first concept, tradition, and step?
Okay, here's the first question. Can you please clarify again the difference between group conscience and majority opinion?
It's a tough one, and it is that idea, and sometimes even at World Service, the vote is so close together that, you know, it looks like there isn't really a majority, and sometimes a majority being half the people, sometimes a majority, you know, being two-thirds of the people. And I found that for me, what really makes sense there, this is when I'm leading something because I don't lead World Service, but if it doesn't look like we've reached substantial unanimity, it always makes me a little bit nervous. But we do always have, like it was said in the reading, we always have the option, because sometimes you just have a time to make a decision, and you have to make the best decision possible with everybody that's there, with the help of everybody's higher powers. And maybe it's not the right decision. We're going to kind of get to that later on in a different set. But you just have to go ahead and make a decision. And so maybe it is something that's really, really close. And maybe then it will be visited again, or maybe it will just turn out that it ends up being the right decision and everybody forgets that it was so close. Gary, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, like much that happens in a spiritual life, the difference is really one of feeling and experience between a majority vote and a group conscience. A majority vote is when everybody votes what they think is best, and then they vote their opinion and they what they believe is best for the good of OA as a whole. A group conscience is when everybody seeks the direction that their higher power would have them go in, whatever that higher power is, and then moves in that direction. And you can actually feel what the example, we'll be talking about this a lot. And in fact, this was going to come up in the next concept. But the example Francine was giving about when they first brought back food plans, the dignity of choice, I think almost everybody went with the assumption that it was a bad idea to bring back food plans. And then when the vote came, you could just feel the spirit move across the room. And everybody just, it was a very emotional, spiritual thing where we just felt this last, you know, after going through two or three versions of the dignity of choice, this last one just came up and we all just felt this presence telling us this was the thing to do. And most of us just changed our minds there because we were seeking what our higher powers would have us do, not what just our intergroups or our thoughts would have us do. And I know it's a kind of nebulous answer to that question, but it really is the difference between just voting our opinions and voting what we believe our higher power would have us do.
Okay. Could you expand on the last paragraph of the slides, temporary solutions?
I think that for me, that temporary solution sometimes is nothing is permanent. And at different times in OA, I've seen things being done one way, and maybe several years later, you know, it will be done another way. And sometimes what we have to do, like I just said, is like you might have a time constraint and you might just have to go ahead and make what you think is the best solution, you know, at the time, or do something that you say, you know, until here we do this. And I remember a wonderful trustee I worked with the very beginning of my service who said, like, sometimes it's okay to just say, let's try this for a little bit and see if it works. And then if it doesn't, we go back to finding other solutions.
Concept one, in a nutshell, is more about listening to what all opinions are before becoming part of the group conscious, because all opinions are valuable.
Exactly. A person gets a star. It is. And I think in what's especially hard is to learn, for me, what's especially hard is, oh, sometimes somebody's really new. And I think, what do they know about OA? You know, but sometimes they come up with the best solutions, you know, and people know how, so many people know how to do things so much better than I know how to do them, that when I just listen, there's often a solution I never would have thought of that is the God solution to the problem.
You know, that's absolutely right, but whatever that writer said, but sometimes it's tricky, particularly online business meetings. Because it's like a world service, we follow Robert's rules. So there's like three pros, three cons for an amendment. There's two pros, two cons. So it only really works. So like, instead of hearing everybody, we need to make sure that all the cons speak to one another so they can get all their points in, even though it's only three people getting those points across. So frequently we don't get to hear everybody, but hopefully we get to hear every point.
Okay. When it's written and allow interim decisions, does that mean that after a decision is made and the group sees that it's not really working, they can make another decision to overrule the last one? Do we need to wait to a special meeting to do an interim decision?
I like that question. And I'm going to say, Gary, I think it's coming up in another segment, isn't it? Really the answer to that. And it does mean, yes, I think that's my segment, which is why I know it's coming up. Yes, we can make decisions again because it isn't working. And you don't have to wait, but I will talk about that again in a different concept where, you know, give it a reasonable shot, unless it's just something drastic, you know, maybe involving money. You don't want to overturn every decision right away. And I think we'll answer that more later in a different concept, step, and tradition. Okay. So I think we'll move forward now to concept two.
Concept two. The OA groups have delegated to World Service Business Conference the active maintenance of our world services. Thus, the World Service Business Conference is the voice, authority, and effective conscience of OA as a whole, and its spiritual principle is conscience. With thousands of OA groups worldwide, OA cannot hold a group conscious meeting including every member. It is a practical impossibility. To reach a group conscious that represents the fellowship as a whole, OA holds the annual World Service Business Conference. Collectively, delegates form the group conscious of OA as a whole. We have found that this representational democracy is the best method for serving OA. Connecting the pieces. And I'll be talking a little bit about each of these and how they kind of relate. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Tradition two. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They may not govern. They do not govern, rather. Concept two. The OA groups have delegated to World Service Business Conference the active maintenance of our world services. Thus, the World Service Business Conference is the voice, authority, and effective conscience of OA as a whole. I want to say a few words about the step first, even though I recognize many of you, and I know you know this stuff at least as well as I do. You know, so many people come in and object to the spiritual God stuff, and I'm also the chair of the Unity with Diversity Committee, and I work a lot with the service board called the Atheist Agnostic Secular Service Board. So we do have a service board directly concerned with atheist agnostics and secularists. and they do recover. Personally, I was raised in OA to believe this is a spiritual program, and but they do recover, and I work with them a lot. They find their way. So if you're of that ilk, you should know there is a place for you, and you don't need to feel isolated in OA. If you're interested in that, you would go to OA Secularist Service Board, oaseculistserviceboard.org. And you would find meetings and whatnot that serve you. Personally, when I came in, I was arguing with my sponsor. I wasn't an atheist. I wasn't an agnostic. I wasn't a believer. I was just obnoxious. I was so obnoxious. And I was going to argue with my sponsor. Whatever side he was on, I was going to argue the opposite. He believed in God. So I was arguing with him all the reasons there couldn't be a God. You know, all the stuff your sponsees argue with you. And I, you know, I was telling him, you know, the blind people, the Holocaust, all that stuff. He said the most important thing to me. He said, "I don't give a hoot what you believe." He didn't use the word hoot. Two guys, you can guess what he said. Said, "I don't give a hoot what you believe." And then he said, just like this, he said, "So God hasn't chosen to reveal the nature of the cosmos to you, Moses." He said it just like that. He said, "If you want to get well, come to believe this." He said, "People who get well come to believe this." He said, "Find a way." He said, "I don't care how, but find a way." So that's what I did. I found a way. You know? Then he said something, and this is the kind of thing when I tell people this, it makes me a little bit unpopular. So I apologize in advance if this offends you. But he said, if you're not willing to believe in some power greater than yourself, even the group something, if you're not willing to believe in some power greater than yourself, it's not that you're a bad person. It just means that you want to eat more than you want to get well. It's just that simple. And coming into OA, you might be a compulsive eater, and you might prefer eating to not eating. And that's kind of why we're here. The second tradition tells us that there's a loving God who expresses himself in our group conscience. And for most of us, the way we come to find God is through the love offered to us from the group. And the same love, the same consciousness, the same power is what makes us feel whole and welcomed in OA. When I came in, there were even fewer men than there are now. And I have to be honest, part of me dug that. Part of me liked it because I was, you know, at 340 pounds, I was still getting at least some attention from women. You know, they were saying hello to me, good morning, that kind of stuff. And I come from an abusive background. I was sexually and physically abused by both my parents. So being around women was a little bit comfortable for me, more comfortable for me. But I was the only guy, and it was kind of concerning. And having this loving consciousness throughout OA and going to intergroup and going into service made me feel welcomed. It made me feel at home. And I trusted it. And the more service I did and the more service I do, the more I see this group conscious functioning. And I experienced this over and over again at World Service and throughout my service in OA. The way it works at World Service is that all of us, you might remember around January or February, your intergroup or your service body gets this agenda thing, this agenda questionnaire with motions that are being brought forth to the World Service Business Conference. And your local intergroup asks you as an individual member, do you want this discussed at World Service? And you get to vote on whether or not it should be discussed. And then you send a representative first to your region and then to World Service to discuss it. And you give your representatives some feedback on how you would like them to vote. But when they get there, you're sending this delegate not to simply record your vote, but because you trust their judgment and their character. So when they get to World Service, keep in mind, they get to hear debate. They get to hear information that you did not have when you met at intergroup. And they trust when they get there, you're trusting them to turn to their higher power for direction. So that the group conscious that forms at World Service represents, because everybody can go, it represents the group conscious of OA as a whole. So we trust that the decisions made at World Service Business Conference are connected to the group conscious of all OA members. And while we might individually not agree with every decision made, I certainly don't. I don't agree. But I trust that decision more than I trust my own decision. And as time has shown over and again, when World Service is in error, we fix it. But in the meantime, I trust the decision made by World Service more than the one made by this, the second step told me I'm insane. Let's summarize. Trusting our group conscious process is the backbone of this concept. We as a fellowship have come to understand that the power greater than ourselves in which we place our individual hopes for recovery is expressed for OA by the World Service Business Conference, which acts on behalf of the fellowship as its current group conscious. Current, which means it might change. New literature, selection of trustees, revision of fellowship-related policies and bylaws, and sharing the state of the worldwide fellowship is reviewed and decisions are made based on informed group conscious and members' trust in the process. And now, if there are any questions, Francine and I will do our best to make up an answer.
So the first question is, so is concept two about delegation of trust?
Sort of. There are other concepts coming up that are more so about trusting and why we can trust and about creating trust. Concept two is more about the functioning of group conscience for all of OA. It's really about, some of you here have been around long enough to remember that on Unity Day, we used to say the Serenity Prayer at a specific time of day so that members all around the globe were all saying the Serenity Prayer at the same time. Like, you know, it didn't matter what time zone you were in, it was like simultaneous. And my understanding of concept two is that it's kind of like that. It's kind of like this unification of the spirit of OA so that World Service Business Conference can kind of function as one big compulsive eater. It's like all of us kind of coming together spiritually through our connection from the individual to his or her, their group, and through their group to their intergroup or service body, through their service body through the region, and through their region to World Service as one big thing to make one decision. Certainly there is trust involved, but that comes up more so in later concepts. The concepts and traditions are really practical things, but most of my understanding tends to be metaphysical. So it's explaining these very practical things in very metaphysical terms. And
Carrie, I have a question. I was always taught to apply the spiritual principles of the steps, traditions, and concepts in my daily life. And I will admit that I probably haven't done that with the concepts. Can you talk about any personal experience you might have towards applying the spiritual principles behind the concept in your of this concept?
all the time. I live in a country that is currently, it's all over the place. There's a lot of conflict, a lot of people are angry with one another. And my team and a lot of people on my team are really kind of mad at the other team. Really kind of mad at the other team. I pray for that other team every day, every morning. I pray for that other team. I have faith in the rightness of things, that the group conscience of my country, sooner or later, it might not happen this year, but sooner or later, things will settle into peace and love, because that's where we belong.
When an inner group is not working well, how do we get to have trust in the trustees?
I assume you're referring to the trusted servants of the intergroup and not the trustees.
Oh, I can take this one. Sometimes, in OA, we learn things by getting them all wrong. And sometimes we make progress by seeing things that don't work well. So then we can say, well, wait a minute. How could that be better? How could that be different? And one of my favorite sayings is, I just always assume the best intentions of other people. So like somebody might show up in OA and decide to do something a certain way, and I think it's totally crazy and ridiculous, but in my heart, I believe that they're doing what they think is best for the way. So it is that idea of sometimes just trusting, and sometimes it's trusting that things will be different and better because you've seen that sometimes they can be a mess.
Final question is, what can I do if I have doubts about so-called trusted servants, a doubt about a person's recovery?
I'm not very popular sometimes, so I tell you what I do. I call them up and ask them about it, gently and lovingly. I ask them, are you okay? You seem to be having trouble with your recovery. Are you talking to your sponsor? Is there something I can do to help? That's what I do.
Yeah, I agree with Gary. Sometimes it's a tough thing to do, to have to talk to somebody and say, hey, you know, what happened there? And are you all right? Do you need help? You know, what's going on? But I think it's our responsibility. I think it's our responsibility to do that.
For me, the step two is very important, because I am an addict, that I don't trust, because I am a very important addict, and that is very important to me. And the second one, I do not understand, why do we have to trust in our higher power or a loving higher power that can make his will or give the instructions to the conscience, to the conscience of OA as a higher power? What does that mean?
I think the question has to do with using, if your higher power is OA, what does that mean? I guess that's kind of how I'm looking at it.
My very first meeting, there was a really funny guy, and his higher power was the table in our meeting. And he'd say that every week, you know, this is my higher power, the table in this meeting, which always just made me laugh. But, you know, in a way, we all get to choose our higher power, we get to choose what we call our higher power. So I'm, unless I'm misunderstanding the question, I think it has to do with maybe just trusting your higher power. Gary, did you pick something else up?
First of all, I think it's a really important question. First of all, I think it's a misnomer that our higher power can be anything we choose. And that's not true. What the book says it can be anything that, as long as it has two qualifications, it must be a power greater than yourself, and it must be able to solve your problem. If it cannot solve your problem, it is not a usable higher power. So I understand what's being said about the table, but if the table cannot solve your problem, it is not a usable higher power. It must be one that can solve your problem. That's just the deal. I've had many girlfriends that were higher powers that could not solve my eating problem. So just start with that. That's part one. But the question, as I understand, that was asked was, why must we believe in a higher power, and why must OA, you know, why must we trust the higher power of OA? The reason we must trust in a higher power is because if we don't, we're likely to eat ourselves to death. And that's like, that's the main reason. I am a man of faith, and I am a man of God. I am a godly man today. I wasn't when I got here. I am a godly man. I might be wrong. I might be making this crap up. It might be right up there with the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny. I might be wrong. However, my life depends upon my believing this. If you walked into a cancer ward and you said to somebody who's, you know, stage four cancer, about to die, and said to them, all you need to do to get better is believe in the Easter Bunny, they would probably believe in the Easter Bunny. This is a matter of life and death. Since I've been in OA, I've known 16 people who have died of their eating disorder. You can choose misery, or you can choose a lovely, great, happy life. All you have to do is believe. But it is a choice. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Concept three, the right of decision based on trust makes effective leadership possible. Spiritual principle, trust. Working within their job descriptions, trusted servants have the right to decide how to do their jobs. We trust them to act and lead responsibly. The third concept gives OA groups the right to bestow upon a trusted individual the authority to make decisions on behalf of the group when needed. Delegating in this manner allows quick and efficient decision making. This trust is at the heart of concept three. Connecting the pieces. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Tradition three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Concept three, the right of decision based on trust makes effective leadership possible. So concept three. So here's how it came to me at the beginning. Now, not only am I supposed to accept this group conscience idea, but I'm supposed to trust people to do their jobs. Before recovery, I only wanted to do things my way. And this asks me to trust people that I might not feel like trusting very much. And maybe I don't like their way. And how do I know they can act and lead responsibly? I found this mistrust is at heart, usually because I know how much before recovery I thought things were better done my way, but were they really? And now that I've learned to listen to others, I've made some amazing discoveries. Like, people all the time now have ideas that are 1000% better than my ideas. And people can get things done. People can get things done with me. People can get things done without me. I don't always have to have an opinion. And I don't have to tell them how to do it. I can let them do it their way. There are many things that I don't know how to do, but I can trust that others can carry out responsibilities. They can make decisions. They can take actions and guide me and others in a well-intentioned way. When I've met the requirement for OA membership, that desire to stop eating compulsively, and because I've turned my will and my life over to God, then I find trust in others. Questions?
The question that was asked earlier was if you have a chair that is not respecting the traditions and concepts. So that could be a chair of a meeting, a chair of an intergroup, a chair of a region. you're supposed to kick me under the table or slap me in the head, which we have permission to do in the chat at any time when I do that. Because trust me, I'm sure I do it, right? You don't mean to. But in any case, what do you do? What do you do when that happens, when it's breaking the unity of a group?
Well, I think Gary touched on that a bit previously, and I agree with him, and it's a hard thing to do, but you go to that individual and you talk to them, and you need to be honest but kind with them and let them know what you think, the problem is, and just have that dialogue, with that person. I would say in all the years I've gone to World Service, and you usually serve on committees for a year afterwards, there have been people that I thought did an okay job, people I thought did a great job, people I thought did a lousy job. And I know that one of the things I learned was I need to learn to work with everyone. But that working with everyone involves saying, if I think that something's out of line, it's just like in a meeting, if we're not respecting the traditions and the concepts, then we need to speak up about it. So I think it's that speaking up. And I also have been involved in situations where in some instances, I'm always really careful about voting for someone to be a treasurer because of money, and everything that goes with that. And sometimes, we have things where we check to see if people, are healthy with money, and sometimes they're not. And sometimes we have to remove people from service positions if we don't find them trustworthy. And that can be just really difficult, but I have, I've experienced that in a way. Gary?
Yeah, that's the only thing I was going to add is that you can, if somebody, let's say the chair of an intergroup, isn't following the traditions of the, you can call for a vote to have them removed. And if the vote goes such that they're not removed, then you need to learn how to live with great disappointment.
And remember, it's not forever.
How can the knowledge and experience of the traditions be brought better into the group and regions?
I have a suggestion on that. I, for myself, try to attend at least one meeting a week that studies the traditions and reads the concepts, because otherwise people never hear about them. And I've heard of people being in LA 2 or 3 years and somebody will say, oh, what about such and such tradition? And somebody says, what's a tradition? So I think it does start at a group level that you talk about the traditions in your meeting. Gary?
I have mixed feelings about this. It's a question of when. I don't know that somebody in their first 6 months, a year, maybe even 2 years of recovery, really needs to know the traditions. Let people put down the food, deal with what's killing you first, and then worry about crosstalk. excuse me. I think in recent years, we have too many tradition police. It is important if traditions are being violated at your meeting, it is important to speak up. But I also think it's nice to, after the meeting, go over to somebody and say, we really don't discuss outside literature. You don't need to yell across the room the minute somebody mentions Hemingway. Or things that aren't traditions. I've heard so many people go, like, somebody just starts sharing and somebody yells at them, "Who are you? Like, who are you?" And identifying, my name, and I'm a compulsive eater, that's not a tradition. That's just a custom. We need to remember that the second part of our name is anonymous. I'm allowed to just say my name is Cinderella or nothing. I'm allowed to just share. I'm just saying that it's important to study the traditions after you've been here a while, but at the same time, they're called traditions, not rules. They're best practices. They're not they're not meant to be bludgeons with which to beat each other up. And that's just my take on it. Thank you.
Summary. Recovery provides us with the ability to make appropriate decisions, including sometimes deciding to allow other trusted servants to make decisions when necessary. Delegating in this manner allows for quick and efficient decision-making and dissemination of information. The trust that permits members to act within their delegated authority is at the heart of this concept. This concept does not remove our individual responsibility regarding support of our decisions.
All right, concept four. The right of participation ensures equality of opportunity for all in the decision-making process, and the spiritual principle is equality. At all levels of service, each member has a voice on all issues. This participation may be direct via discussion and vote at the local and virtual levels, or it may be indirect via trusting an elected delegate or trustee to participate at other service levels, such as at service body board meetings. This direct and delegated participation ensures the democratic foundation of Overeaters Anonymous. And these are the step, tradition, and concept together. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Tradition four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups, or OA as a whole. And concept four, the right of participation ensures equality of opportunity for all in the decision-making process, and the spiritual principles of courage, autonomy, and equality. I would say what ties all of these together is that this balancing act between individuality and autonomy, and it all involves knowing ourselves. It really involves knowing who we are. In terms of step four, I was really fortunate with my first. I've done probably now at least 6 or 8 fourth steps, probably more. I was really fortunate with my first fourth step because I didn't hear about how terrible and how horrifying they were until after I done did mine. So I was lucky. After I did mine, I kept hearing in meetings how terrified everybody was. We probably lose more people, more members, between steps three and four than anywhere else in the fellowship. Maybe nine. But the reason for this, I don't think, this is just my opinion. And everything I say here, by the way, is just Gary speaking. This isn't any official OA stuff. Just because I'm a trustee doesn't mean anything. This is just Gary, not OA, except for when I quote from the literature. But I don't think this is because step four is so daunting. I just think it's because step three is so effective. And I think the big book, it says, many of us have had a great effect. Step three, I was one of those. Step three really changed my life. And really, there's nothing more dangerous than an addict who's doing well. You know, like we start feeling better. One of my friends defines an addict as people who figure out what works and then stop doing it. It's like we start feeling better and we stop. Step three, you know, some of the obsession goes away. We're feeling a little better. And, you know, why bother with step four? Anyhow, two big things about the fourth step. We come to know ourselves. And what a blessing that is. It seems like such a drudgery, but it's such a great thing. My belief is, I don't know, my belief is that the average person comes to the end of their life. And in those last moments is like, wait, I never even got to know who I am. I never, you know, and we're not led to the fourth step by virtue. It's not because we're good people that we do this. We do this by necessity to stay alive. But we are blessed with an opportunity to discover who we are. What a thing. What a thing. So next time your sponsees are bitching to you about the fourth step, remind them what a gift it is. What a gift it is to know who we are. And then knowing who we are and the fourth tradition, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. The fourth tradition, you know, the third tradition gives each individual member to be who they are and be welcomed here. The fourth tradition does for groups what the third tradition does for the individual. It gives each group the right to be wrong. In 1947, there was an AA group in Virginia that served beer at the meeting. Because that group believed, well, beer, it doesn't count. and you could see an OA group thinking something like that. Well, it's brown. It came from Whole Foods. It must be good for you. You can see an OA group doing something like that. And people would write to what was then called the Alcoholic Foundation saying, you know, this group is serving beer. And the foundation would write back saying, we think that's a bad idea. You know, what do you want us to do? Like, we can't kick them out. And of course, eventually the group kind of died out. My friend Greg used to refer to this thing, our thing, the 12-step fellowships, as a self-cleaning oven. They take care of themselves. They do. And groups, in truth, groups that ignore the one or more of the 12 traditions or the concepts do harm OA as a whole. They do. There are many groups now that have taken it upon themselves to read the 12 steps in a gender-neutral way. I support that idea. And the way you do that is you make a motion to World Service so that the group conscious of OA can make that decision. It is not appropriate for individual groups to make that decision because OA Inc. is a corporation and we have permission from AA to change the steps to fit OA. OA has that copyright permission. That's copyright. OA has that permission. Your group does not. You know, and when you do that, you're violating OA's tradition. You're making AA, frankly, pissed off at us. And they might revoke that copyright permission. They have every right to. That's why we have this stuff, you know, this process, this that we were talking about before, the World Service Business Conference. But just in terms of life skills, the fourth tradition teaches us how to live autonomously and yet in harmony with others. Tell me that alone is not worth the price of admission and coming into OA. I mean, that alone, how to live autonomously and in harmony with your brother, your sister, your father, your drunk uncle. God, that alone. And then in terms of the right of participation, there are many groups like the 90-day meetings, and there are some groups that don't quite live up to this. But overall, any member is supposed to be able to speak at any business meeting, have a voice, not necessarily a vote. An intergroup or service body can say you must be a representative or a delegate to vote. But anybody should have a voice, and minority opinions are heard. And that right of participation, I spoke earlier about the agenda questionnaire. Your ability to participate at every level in the decision-making process is what makes this principle of equality available to all members of All Readers Anonymous. Somebody with one day of recovery, or not even recovery, somebody who's binging at the meeting has as much right to share and as much right to participate in a business meeting as the old timer bleeding deacon who thinks they know everything like me. Yeah, sometimes you have to tell me to shut up. Summary, the right of participation provides each member the ability to have a voice, direct or indirect, in the recovery processes of OA. This includes the writing of inventories, being responsible for making sure that the primary purpose of our fellowship is being addressed at each group, as well as participating in the different levels of OA service. The spiritual principles of integrity, purpose, and consideration are intertwined to expressly make sure that everyone is a part of their own recovery and the long-term health of OA as a whole.
We have a question. Can a group limit voting at a business meeting to the length of abstinence?
It can. It's generally not a healthy thing to do. It can limit voting. It can't limit voice. You know, there's a difference between having a voice and having a vote. An intergroup certainly can do that. It can set limits on who can be a member of the intergroup, of who can be a representative. A group can do that. For example, the 90-day meetings do that. But it really can't. It really is not supposed to limit who has a voice. So anybody can speak up and share their opinion, but not necessarily have a vote.
So how do we get our voice to be heard when the person, like the rep at the meeting, the representation, trustee or representation, I don't know how it is in English, doesn't believe in your idea, so they don't bring it back to the intergroup. So how does World Service get the ideas if it starts like the person that is supposed to be taking the ideas of the group does not bring them to the next level?
There are all kinds of service positions and people eager to help you and your groups. So if you are having some sort of conflict in your group, you can always ask the chair of your intergroup to attend your next business meeting. If you have problems with your intergroup, you can always ask the chair of your region or your trustee to attend your next intergroup meeting. If you have problems with your region and your regional chair is not, with your regional chair, you can always ask your trustee to attend your next regional meeting. That is, there's always like, you don't want to do this for every minor little conflict because if you haven't been hurt, if your feelings haven't been hurt, if you haven't been resentful, if you haven't been pissed off, if you haven't been greatly disturbed, it simply means you haven't been to enough business meetings yet. Because if you go to business meetings regularly, all these things will happen to you. What I'm saying, though, is that if you really feel like you're being disrespected and you're not being treated fairly, there is somebody at, the chair of the next whatever, the next lower, in the inverted pyramid, the next lower rung, the chair of that position would always be glad to come and assist you. That doesn't mean you will get your way. All that means is that you will have a more objective voice or personage there to assist you.
I'd only add, well, Gary's described what I always called the chain of communication and follow that chain. In other words, if, like Gary said, you're upset, disturbed, whatever, and you want and you're not being heard and you want someone else to come and help, go to the next level next to yours. Don't immediately jump to the trustee. Go through the other levels first, follow that chain of communication.
There is also documents on OA.org, but we will promise to put that on the virtual region website, and we'll share that with Region 9 if they would like to put it on their website, where you can find about if you have a disagreement at meetings, how to deal with that, or at every level of OA, how to deal with that. Would it be fair to say that the step we know ourselves, tradition we know our limits and boundaries, and concepts we know where we stand? That, I guess, is someone asking if that summary makes sense or.
I always learned like the steps help me to keep from killing myself. The traditions help me from, killing others. And then the concepts help me from just leaving the group as a whole because I'm too pissed off at what you're doing.
Well, that makes sense to me. I mean, the steps guide us in our personal recovery, the traditions in keeping group unity, and the 12 concepts help us to really do service with each other and service in the world.
Concept 5, individuals have the right of appeal and petition in order to ensure that their opinions and personal grievances will be carefully considered. Spiritual principle consideration. Decisions are made by human beings. Sometimes members feel that a decision is made in error or in conflict with our steps, traditions, and/or concepts. Members have the right to request that the deciding body or another service body within the OA structure reconsider the decision. Connecting the pieces. Step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Tradition 5, each group has but one primary purpose. To carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Concept 5, individuals have the right of appeal and petition in order to ensure that their opinions and personal grievances will be carefully considered. Spiritual principles, integrity, purpose, and consideration. So, concept 5, the right of individuals to ask us to reconsider decisions. I love this concept because it allows us to reconsider. It allows us to acknowledge we might make errors of judgment and then revisit them. Now, what it doesn't mean is that every time a group conscience doesn't go my way, that I make an appeal. Petition doesn't mean that every time I disagree, I gather others to my side to point out what we think was wrong. This isn't a committee decision, even though the committee in my head may be agreeing. I find it wise to ask my sponsor or my service sponsor about my intended actions. Maybe I need to live with the decision a while before I can take any action. How can I carry the message if all I ever do is criticize every decision? The big book tells me if I concentrate on the solutions increase. Also says if you concentrate on the problems increase. This may mean that I need to look at myself, as the steps tell me, first to make sure this isn't just in my own nature, but is in fact something to ask for reconsideration. And I do just love this tradition, but as we've mentioned, it doesn't mean just because I ask for it to be reconsidered, it doesn't mean it's going to go my way. Also, one of the things I love about World Service Business Conference is when we make a decision, we don't clap, we don't shout hooray, we don't jump up and down, because maybe Gary's sitting next to me and he feels really strongly the other way, and that motion just didn't go his way. And so we learn in recovery just, you know, to honor that it might take people a little bit of time to get their heads around a decision that has just been made. It could be, you know, it could be very upsetting. Gary could be really upset right now. And I'm not going to sit here and clap and cheer about what just happened because, oh, my side won, because really, in a way, there aren't sides. You know, what we're doing is making decisions with our higher power that we think are best for, whether it's our meeting group, our intergroup, our service board, our region, or World Service. We're just doing, we're doing the best that we can. And as this concept says, sometimes we make mistakes, or sometimes, you know, you just personally totally agree and you feel like totally disagree and you think that that's just not right. And then you go, you know, and you can ask for that decision to be revisited. So it goes along with our whole idea that as a fellowship, we're very democratic in nature. And what we want to do is hear people. And if people don't feel heard, or if they feel like the decision isn't correct and they want to revisit it, they have the right to do that. Summary. The ability to change is a significant part of recovery in OA. Disagreements are expected in all relationships, and participation in OA, especially in service, is a relationship. After working the steps and looking at traditions on an issue, members are always within their rights to request that a decision be reconsidered. Requesting reconsideration does not mean that the decision will be changed, just that the decision will be reconsidered based on the questions raised, and it may be changed. So the question is, how does one really go about asking for a right of appeal and a right of petition? And sometimes it's very simple, and you might just go to the next level and explain the problem. And like Gary said, ask somebody to come to your meeting, maybe to help mediate it, discuss it, have a different point of view. Sometimes it's more serious in nature, and you might have to write up your appeal, giving, you know, here's what happened, you know, here's what I think, you know, and here's what outcome we would like. Or you can even leave it open-ended, you know, can you reconsider or do this a different way? I'm reminded of one time that a decision was made by World Service that affected my National Service Board, and they hadn't been advised about it, and it affected their literature sales. And so they actually wrote up, you know, they wrote something up, their board, to present to the World Service Office, who got that and then said, oh gosh, when we made that decision, we didn't realize the impact that it was going to have on your literature service. And the decision got reversed. So it does happen.
What should you do if there's a problem in a group between fellows having a disagreement and the intergroup chair is part of the group? who should you take the problem to?
Well, you would still take it to the intergroup. The chair is just a member, and you would still take it to the intergroup. If you did not get, if it's not resolved there, then you might speak to the chair of the region and ask the chair of the region to attend the next intergroup meeting. But if the chair of the intergroup is a member of your group, they're just a member of the group. You know, I'm a trustee and I go to many meetings. And when I go to a meeting, I'm a member. I'm no whoop-de-doo. just because I go to Albuquerque now and then, it just here's how I got to be a trustee. I ate too much. Those are the qualifications. That's how the chair of your intergroup got to be the chair of the intergroup. They either overate or underate or became obsessed with food. I mean, it's not like they went to school for it, you know. But yeah, if they're presenting a problem, same process. Speak to the chair of the, or, you know, person of the next service level.
Someone would like to hear the how you apply this kind that question of how you applied this in your life. Answered for this either concept 4 or concept 5.
Well, concept 5 for me, I apply in my life. If I'm like, if my family decides to do something and I don't like what's going on, I can actually say, wait a minute, guys, you know, can we talk about this? Or I can choose to take a different action, which is, you know, the same type of thing that I can do in OA. And while in my family, there's not an appeal to a next level of service, you know, there is my right to be able to say, you know, hey, I've thought about this. Sometimes I have to say, I thought about this. And when you first talked about it, I should have said something and I didn't. That was where I was wrong. And now that I've thought about it, you know, I need to say this and this is what I need. And again, like anything else, people can say, well, that's just great. We'll reconsider it. Or they can say, to heck with you, we're going to go ahead and do it this way. And then I learned to live with that.
Just like you said, these things apply in that I've grown up. You know, I've learned to stand up for myself and I've learned to walk away when I need to walk away. And that's pretty much what this concept says. One way we go. Concept 6. The World Service Business Conference has entrusted the Board of Trustees with the primary responsibility for the administration of Overeaters Anonymous, and the spiritual principle is responsibility. Although OA is non-structured, we may create service boards or committees responsible to those they serve. In practice, the needs of the group as a whole may sometimes be served by a smaller group with well-defined purpose. To safeguard the fellowship, the Board of Trustees is given responsibility of overseeing the administration of the corporate entity. Trustees answer directly to the World Service Business Conference delegates and are responsible for carrying out World Service Business Conference directives, as well as for serving as liaisons to service bodies and members. And so to connect the pieces, Step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Tradition 6, an OA group would never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. In Concept 6, the World Service Business Conference has entrusted the Board of Trustees with the primary responsibility for the administration of Overeaters Anonymous. And the spiritual principles of willingness, solidarity, and responsibility. Please forgive me, you know, I tend to overlook the spiritual principles associated with each of these steps, traditions, and because like some of you, when I came in, the steps were the principles. Like they didn't have a little catchphrase for each. And I like them. I just, they weren't what I was taught. And I can only kind of give away the program I was given. So first about step six, or the three of them really, all three of these, the step, the tradition, and the concept, I think, are about kind of getting serious with this thing, about taking it for real, almost about purity, the purity of the program, the purity of our own intentions and our own working of the program. And I remember my sponsor saying to me once, treat reality as if it's serious. You know, take it for real. That's a good idea. And it's a good idea. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. This is the famous step in the beginning in the AA 12 and 12, where it says, this is the step that separates the boys from the men. And that's, you know, written in the 1950s, but it's the guy saying that, it says, is a clergyman friend of AA's. That's a guy named Father Ed Dowling, who's a Franciscan priest, who also, if we ever get time to talk about it, played a very important role in the first great controversies in OA. His name is Ed Dowling. He became Bill Wilson's spiritual sponsor and had a great role in the creation of the AA 12 and 12, not the big book, but the 12 and 12, but also really played a role in OA. Anyhow, I mentioned before that I think of OA as one big compulsive eater, like it's just one, you know, the personality of one big compulsive eater. And our job is to kind of clear ourselves to get free to be closer to God or to our higher power. And if you think of the things that get in the way, if you look at the sixth tradition, money, property, and prestige, what diverts us from our primary purpose? Money, property, prestige, throw sex in there. I think you pretty much have it covered. I mean, I get up in the morning, I pray, I meditate, I get close to God. I love you, God. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I go about my day, and what are the things that are likely to get in my way? Money, property, prestige, lust. At least for me, those are the things I'm likely to trip over in one way or another. And those are the things that OA gets tripped up over. You know, money. You know, one of my sponsees the other day told me that his intergroup doesn't send money to World Service because they heard a rumor that OA had $10 million, $10 million in its investment fund. And I was like, $10 million? We don't have any. We're like, honestly, I've been in OA 36 years. I'm a pretty trustworthy fellow. You couldn't trust me with access to $10 million. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think I'd be trustworthy, but $10 million? We don't have anywhere near that. If you've heard that rumor, squash it. World Service Business Conference is the voice of World Service as a whole, of OA as a whole. The Board of Trustees is responsible to that voice. We do what World Service Business Conference says. But the World Service Business Conference also trusts the Board of Trustees with the business of OA, with making up the payroll, with paying our workers. We have, I think, 14 staff. Those are people who do everything from running our social media to answering your emails, to answering the phones, to securing our publications. We have legal staff to oversee our copyrights and make sure our name isn't being misused. We're having issues with that right now. We're being sued because some intergroup put up images that were copywritten, and we need to pay for all that. And we don't need everybody in the World Service Business Conference involved in that. So we trust trustees to handle that business for the corporation. Summary, trusted servants are just that. OA members who the service body believes have the recovery and service experience to provide leadership, direction, and oversight, leadership and direction, and oversight to determine actions in between official meetings. The World Service Business Conference elects willing and qualified members of the fellowship to serve on the Board of Trustees. The board provides administrative direction and carries out conference-approved directives, meaning we do what you tell us, keeping in mind the principles of the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts.
How can you explain how it turns out that a member in a meeting ends up being part of the process of electing those trusted servants?
One thing you can do is do more service and do go to World Service. you can go. But if you don't want to go, what you do is you vote for a representative from your meeting to go to your intergroup. And your intergroup gets to send a number of delegates to World Service. They also get to send a number of representatives to your region and to vote and represent you there. So you have what we call representative democracy, where you elect a representative to represent you at intergroup, and then your intergroup sends representatives to region and delegates to World Service to represent you in those service bodies. So it's direct representation rather than going. However, I would encourage you to run for representative from your meeting to your intergroup, and from your intergroup to region, and from your intergroup to World Service at least once or twice in your OA recovery process. It does help us feel, at least everybody I know who has done it, it helps us feel like not just a member of our group, but a member of OA as a whole. And it does seem to alter us spiritually. Everybody I know who's done it does feel a larger connection to the thing as a whole.
The next question has to do with how does, step six relate to, like, the concept and the step and the tradition relate to each other? Can you speak more to that?
Sure. Step six is really a powerful step. It's kind of asking, like, when you decided to turn your will and your life over to the care of God, did you mean it? It's not just giving up most of us come here to deal with not even our eating, to deal with weight. And it takes a while before we even realize there's a relationship between our eating and our weight. So we deal with our eating. And we get to step six and we really start to recognize the character defects that get in our way from having the kind of spiritual awakening, the deep and effective spiritual awakening, such that we are no longer obsessed with food. I identify as a recovered compulsive eater because I am no longer obsessed with food. I have been relieved of the obsession. I've had that spiritual awakening. That really began for me in step six when I really started looking at being relieved of these character defects that kept me from being closer to my God. The sixth tradition, I have to go back to it. Helps me to be clear in my service roles. Like, once I've taken the sixth step, I am ready to be more than just myself and to be part of my group and my intergroup and my region, to grow beyond myself. And as I grow beyond myself, I have to be aware of those tendencies of money, power, property, and prestige. When I had 5 years of recovery, I thought I was the bomb. I went to intergroup and I thought if these old ladies, I was young then, I had hair and everything. I thought if these old ladies would only listen to me, we could be done an intergroup in a half an hour. And Winnie, the chair of intergroup, just smacked me in the back of the head. She had these big, manly hands, and she would whack me in the back of the head. This is how she taught me love and tolerance. Ow. And I thought it was power, preparing, and pursuit. It was all ego. It was all me thinking I knew better. And the sixth tradition helped me in letting go of some of those same character defects that were now running me in OA. And then with the sixth concept, I learned that there are people who knew things that I didn't. I thought all this copyright nonsense and all this legal nonsense was keeping us from spreading the literature around, and did not realize that there were trustees who had our budget in mind. I didn't realize that recovery costs money. I didn't realize there were all these things I thought OA should do, and didn't realize that there were people with a budget in mind saying, we can't do all those wonderful things, Gary, because you haven't contributed enough damn money, Gary. I hadn't put all that together until I really worked a sixth step. I hope all that makes sense. Thank you.
Can the trustee of a general policy and finance, so I think they might be talking about a trusted servant of policy and finance, maybe not just the board of trustees, but I'm not sure, have multiple service position within groups, intergroup, or region? Can someone have multiple service positions, I guess, at different levels?
That would depend upon the bylaws of the specific service bodies. Some service bodies have bylaws prohibiting that. Some service bodies don't. I have a good friend who serves on the board of Region 9. He's also, or she's also on the board of an intergroup. It depends on the bylaws of the particular service bodies. They get to decide.
Trustees at the World Service level, are they allowed to do that?
No, if trustees at the World Service, our bylaws say that. That's what I mean. It depends on the bylaws of the particular service bodies. Trustees at the World Service level are not allowed to do service above the group level. If we ask permission, we can do some stuff.
Now, I was just going to say, there are also some regions who have bylaws that specify what other service positions you can do if you're, for instance, on the board. Some do and some don't.
Francine and I have both served in different region thingies at the same time, I think, right? Yeah. But I also will just say, personally, I had to learn to weigh and measure my service like I weigh and measure my food. And I'll leave it at that. Okay.
I see the question about the upside down pyramid. That's just that, in a way, the groups are at the top, the pyramid comes down, and the trustees are at the bottom, so that each level works for the levels beyond them. So it's not like a typical management structure where we're the meetings, but we're dictated to by the intergroup, who's dictated to by the region, who's dictated to by World Service. No, in OA, it's the other way around. So they call it the upside down pyramid. Okay, concept 7. The Board of Trustees has legal rights and responsibilities accorded to them by OA bylaws, subpart A. The rights and responsibilities of the World Service Business Conference are accorded to it by tradition and by OA bylaws, subpart B. Spiritual principle balance. OA bylaws, subpart A, governs the organization of the World Service Office and describes the responsibilities of the Board of Trustees as directors of a nonprofit corporation. It is amendable by the board, usually with the assistance of legal counsel. OA bylaws subpart B, which is approved by the WSBC, the World Service Business Conference, defines OA membership, basic service structure, and procedures relating to the functioning of the fellowship. Because OA is committed to the group conscience process, the board willingly accepts the responsibility to carry out the decisions made by the WSBC and delegates who willingly place their trust in the board to do so. The trustees have legal authority, whereas the conference has moral authority. And connecting the pieces. Step 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Tradition 7, every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Concept 7, the Board of Trustees has legal rights and responsibilities accorded to them by OA bylaws, subpart A. The rights and responsibilities of the World Service Business Conference are accorded to it by tradition and by OA bylaws, subpart B. Spiritual principles, humility, responsibility, and balance. Okay, so the principles in this step in tradition and concept really, really speak deeply to me. Like initially in recovery, I feel like I had to, in essence, throw away parts of me and look at my ego and how my ego wanted to be in charge, and then ask for changes to be made in me. And I actually studied, and I love studying still, group behavior, but I didn't really know how to be an effective part of a group until OA. And then I had to learn how to contribute my time, my talents, my treasures, so that I and my OA group or my inner group, my service body, my region, the World Service Business Conference become self-supporting as far as I can be a part of that. And by me doing, you know, what I can, when I can, and I can serve others. When you talk about learning about parts A and B of the bylaws, well, I think that's an ongoing process. I know that Gary's probably read OA bylaws subpart A, and I've read bits of it at different times, but the part that we normally hear about is subpart B. So if you've never heard of, you know, A, it's okay. Just know that it's there. But again, it comes up to trust. I trust that there are members who are there who are going to handle the management of OA as a whole, the management of the business part of it. And then when it comes to the World Service Business Conference, I again have to trust that we're all going to make decisions for OA as a whole in the best interest of OA. When all of this comes together, I think that's when we talk about balance, because each is doing their own part. So for me, like that very beginning of having to learn, you know, the humility of, you know, of just becoming humble. You know, I've talked about that a bit already, about being willing, you know, to learn to listen, to be able to allow other people to have their say, and then also responsibility. I feel like in OA, I learned that I make a commitment and I keep that commitment. And before OA, I could make commitments right and left, but that didn't necessarily mean that I would keep them. And again, that trust comes back in for me, because I trust other people that when they make commitments, they're going to keep those commitments also. And then that idea about balance. I like, you know, I like that it's balanced. I don't have to sit here today and, You know, I don't have to worry today about the running of a way. You know, is everybody getting paid? Is everything being taken care of? I trust that other people are in those positions and can do that. And that, again, is that idea, you know, of trust and responsibility, because, you know, we give people responsibilities like we talked about earlier. You know, in a service position, you get certain responsibilities and you're expected to carry those out to the best of your ability. And again, I think that just leads us all to the wonderful balance of how OA works. And this is here I discovered an error in this. I don't know how many people have read it before, but it is the seventh step, tradition and concept, address our place in the world in general and in OA specifically. At meetings, we are responsible for our individual participation and support. Service boards and regions are responsible for the activities required to carry the message of recovery to compulsive eaters and our members. WSBC supports and amplifies the workings of the fellowship as a whole. The Board of Trustees has fiscal and managerial oversight of the corporation and implements the directives of the World Service Business Conference. Each level of service has the responsibility to pass on suggestions and experience, strength, and hope to other levels within our upside-down service pyramid. Decisions can be amended, but only the responsible parties can alter them.
I just want to say, for most of us, the vast majority of us, the major way we work the 12th step is through the seventh tradition. The 12th step is about carrying the message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. Today, we don't really carry that message directly. For the most part, people come to meetings. If they've come to a meeting, they've already heard the message. They know OA exists. That's how they found us. Even the people we sponsor have heard about OA. That's how they found us. The way we carry the message, the way we get the word out, is from the hopefully $5 or whatever it is we can put into the basket or contribute to OA through automatic. They have this automatic thing through your bank that just sends it every month to either to your region or to World Service. And that's the reason a bulimic in Turkey or a compulsive eater in New Jersey can find a meeting list. It's the reason we're on Facebook. It's the reason we're on Instagram. It's because of the money you're putting into the basket regularly. And that's the 12th step. Thank you.
I'm going to tell you that I agree with what Gary said, but it's not what it has to be. We can still carry the message directly. And if you go to oavirtualregion.org under carry the message, there is a series of tools there that allow you to go and talk to your doctor, your clergy, your community organizations. There are links to oa.org public service announcements for local television stations and links on there for announcements to local radio stations. And if you have any questions on how to personally use those tools, because I've done a lot of that in my in-person OA meetings, you just go ahead and send me an email. So I didn't mean to step in there, but you can still carry the message directly.
That's okay. And I'm going to amplify too that, like, on the seventh tradition, I know, like, you know, the other day somebody said to me, oh, like such and such a group, you know, they're supporting OA, they give their seventh tradition. I'm like, guys, it's not, guys, girls, sorry. It's not just about that. You know, if you think somebody else is going to do the service, well, trust me, it might not be getting done. You know, so part of what we do is we actually show up, you know, and do service, whatever little bit we can. You know, I love that we do what we can when we can. But that is part of the seventh tradition also is, you know, giving your time and your talents to OA, you know, and sometimes they're not talents you might love, but if you know how to, my service sponsor says, you know, like, well, you know how to do that, Francine. They asked you, so do it. You know, I don't have to love it. I just have to do it. And I only do it for a certain period of time. Somebody else is going to come along and, you know, take the service position next. But it's really important. And I think sometimes people think they can't do service because they don't know how. And there's not a lot of jobs that, you know, you can't either be taught, or, you know, you'll learn how to do them, or somebody else will help you until you learn how to do it. So, I mean, consider that, you know, raise your hand and do what service you can. Concept 8.
The Board of Trustees has delegated to its executive committee the responsibility to administer the World Service Office. The spiritual principle is delegation. The authority to oversee administrative issues is delegated to the executive committee, or what we call the EC, composed of all board officers and other trustees appointed to serve on the EC. The day-to-day management of the World Service Office is assigned to the managing director. The managing director attends all EC meetings but has no vote. The EC meets with the managing director monthly, in person or virtually. In cooperation with the managing director and management staff, the trustees serving on the EC oversee all aspects of operations. This includes creating an annual budget, maintaining a prudent reserve, handling investment matters, and an annual audit, addressing legal issues, and setting the price for literature. Connecting the pieces. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Traditionally, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. In Concept 8, the Board of Trustees has delegated to its executive committee the responsibility to administer the World Service Office. Boy, this is a lot to discuss in a few minutes. The 8th step. A lot of people are nervous about the 9th step. And here's the trick to doing a good 9th step. Do a great 8th step. That's really the deal. If you do a great 8th step, the 9th step is easy. It really is. I mentioned before, I come from an abusive family, incestuous and sexually abusive, physically abusive. I could have died at the hands of either of my parents. And I was doing my 8th step and preparing to make amends to my parents. I stole a few dollars from them here and there. You know, and I was talking to my sponsor and I said, you know, I did this and they did this. You know, like, you go to jail for what they did. And my sponsor said something that really stuck with me. He said, why don't you just forgive them? And he said it like casually. And I heard it like, why don't you just levitate? You know, I'm not telling anybody who's been abused to forgive. That's entirely between you, your sponsor, and your God. I'm just saying what happened to me. He said, forgiveness is just surrendering your right to revenge. That's it. Doesn't mean forgetting. It doesn't mean making them safe. It's surrendering your right to revenge. And the 8th step changed my life. I made that decision and it changed my life. But a good 8th step just makes the 9th step possible. It makes the 9th step easy. It really is. The 8th step, once you're willing, then you're truly willing, and ninth step becomes really doable. And it kind of bleeds into the 8th tradition. This idea of being non-professional, because it's about knowing my limitations. There are some things I can do and some things I can't do. I'm not a handy guy. I'm just not. I don't put her around the house. I don't clean, you know, like a friend of mine said, you're one of those guys who tries to fix everything with a hammer and a screwdriver. And I said, no, I'm one of those guys who tries to fix everything with a telephone call because I can't fix things. I know my limitations. Overeaters Anonymous remains forever non-professional. That's a good deal. That means we're all equal. That means any of us can sponsor. If you've been hesitant to sponsor, or if your sponsees have been hesitant to sponsor, that's more important. My sponsees are not allowed to be hesitant to sponsor. They can be hesitant, but but they're not allowed to not sponsor. They're not allowed to not sponsor. It's the deal I make with them when they ask me to sponsor them. I go, okay, if you will sponsor someday. And they go, I don't know. Well, that's the deal. That's the deal. I will pass it on to you if you will pass it on to somebody else. That's how this works. That we need no special, we're not professional. I could tell you I would be a much worse sponsor if I were a professional. If I were being paid, we would go through the steps very slowly. If I were being paid by the hour, we would be on step four for months. So I mean, that's just, it's just the way, anyhow. And that also bleeds into the eighth concept, because we know our limitations. On the other hand, there are areas where I need a professional. You know, I'm a trustee. I can be trusted. I'm the trustee liaison to the virtual region. I do a lot of stuff in the virtual region. I get called into intergroup meetings. I do a lot of stuff. Some of you know, and I don't want to get into it. I settle a lot of disputes, for example. There's a lot of, you might not know this, but in the virtual region, there's a lot of conflict. So I come in, I sit there, I go, what do you want to do? What do you do? And then they do what they want to do. Anyhow, I'm not the treasurer for OA. I will never be the treasurer for OA. I am not on the auditing committee. However, OA hires an auditor, a professional auditor. We also hire a professional parliamentarian. Dee Dee is the managing director of our publications department. She's brilliant. I have a PhD in American literature and creative writing. Dee Dee is better at editing than I am. She's great. I couldn't get any of my committee work done without Dee Dee. We have a managing director named Dan. He's fantastic. He's got a great sense of humor, and he gets things done. We pay these people because we need them. They make OA run, and then the executive committee oversees all these professionals we hire. That's their job. Summary: delegation of authority allows for a group of trustees to focus on the operations and activities of the World Service Office. While we always remain non-professional, it is the responsibility of the executive committee, that's a small group of trustees within the board of trustees, with the support and assistance of a highly qualified group of employees and consultants, to make sure OA remains financially solvent and operationally effective. To execute these responsibilities, the executive committee regularly assesses OA's changing needs and how to best meet them. An inventory process that keeps OA vital and maintaining our fellowship as a spiritual home for all of us.
Okay, I just need to back up in fairness to previous questions that were asked.
Sure.
Okay, so the Spanish question that was asked was that there's been groups in Spain that are using Google Maps for directions to the meeting, and they're allowing people to post how they felt about the meeting. And this question about that in relation to anonymity, since there are other posts going on there. That was part of the question. And then the other thing was about, can we use advertising to carry the message?
The answer is no and no.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, there's a disagreement.
I do think it would be questionable about anonymity if you're posting chats about how you feel about the meeting and people can tell who you are posting that chat, and I don't want to leave Gary's meeting and say, oh, that was the worst meeting I've ever been to, and I make a post of that. Come on. I don't think so.
But advertising, absolutely. As long as you're not using your face or your name. OA, we have an advertising agency that we pay. And even better than that, we have the chair of the virtual region is a genius when it comes to social media. And we do all kinds of advertising. Advertising is not promotion. Promotion is when Like if I were to go on TV and say, these are my before pictures and these are my after pictures, aren't I wonderful? Come be like me. That's promotion. But we have all kinds of, Claire has made radio spots for men, for people of color, for anorexics and bulimics. We have specifically geared radio advertisements. We have, and we have television ads, public service announcements. We have all kinds of advertising. Some local indie groups put up billboards, all kinds of stuff. Advertising is certainly absolutely okay. Members of OA are anonymous. OA isn't. OA is not anonymous. Just we are.
That's exactly what I was going to say, too, is, you know, we've got anonymous in our name, but we're not going to sit here and not tell anybody about the recovery we've found. And so, of course, when we do that, you know, we put information out there to professionals. We put information out there to the public. You know, those are things. And it can be, some different rules to follow about that. And it can look intimidating the first time you look at it. But it's basically like individually we're anonymous, but our fellowship is not anonymous. We were just recently, I think, again in Dear Abby, you know, where she mentioned Overeaters Anonymous. So, you know, there's no anonymity of our fellowship as a whole.
There is a newly revised manual called Public Information and Professional Outreach. That's available online at OA.org. They'll give you all kinds of processes and ideas for how to do that. Plus what Claire mentioned on the virtualregion.org, there's a whole carrying the message section.
Again, stepping back to concept 7 and how do you practice the principle of balance?
I guess for me, concept 7, I have to watch it, which is why I have a service sponsor, because I do love giving service and I can sometimes raise my hand too often. And I love my favorite line in the big book is, we absolutely insist upon enjoying life. But am I enjoying life if I don't have balance in my life? You know, I have a family, you know, I have other responsibilities. And if I'm not giving any attention to those, then my life is not in balance. And I think also about that, I haven't heard that term for a long time, but that three-legged stool idea, that I have to have this stool that I sit upon. And if one of those legs is too short, like if the steps, you know, too short, then I'm going to fall over and I'm not going to be effective to anybody, you know. And I also love that idea that my cup has to be full before I can then give to others. So if I'm trying to give from an empty cup, that does not work well.
I have another question. It's a multi-part question. Who is the managing director? How are they elected? And what is the criteria? Are the board officers chosen from a pool of trustees? Is there a diagram on OA.org that shows the three different boards and the hierarchy?
These are actually different things. The managing director is a man named Dan Sandweiss. He's newly hired. Our previous managing director, Sarah Armstrong, retired last year after, I think, 23 years of service. Most of our, we're a great hire. Most of our staff has been with us for double digit years. Although last year, because of economics, we had to not give them a Christmas bonus. And we've also had to cut back on their insurance some. And they have stayed with us anyway. That tells you how good an employer we are. But those service people, like our managing director, isn't elected. He or they, depending upon the year, is hired. They are hired through a long interview process. We put out ads like any company. This is the corporation, OA Inc., puts out an ad and people apply. And the executive committee first interviews a whole bunch of people, narrows it down, and then the chair, then our officers, our chair, first vice chair, second vice chair, and treasurer interviews a number of people. And from them, they narrow it down to like three. Then they do another round of interviews, and then they select the managing director, and we trust them in that decision. And they also negotiate the salaries and so forth. That is true for all of the managers, like the director of public, managing director for services, managing director for publications and so forth. And then the managers, the hired staff managers, get to hire staff members for their department, just like any other corporation. OA Inc. is a corporation, is a business. The executive committee are trustees that are appointed by the board of trustees. That is, there are, a full board is 17 members. There are 17 trustees. And then we vote amongst ourselves to elect a chair. We elect what's called the first vice chair and the second vice chair. We elect a treasurer. And then we elect or appoint among ourselves members of the executive committee. And as far as a chart, the best chart to find, if you just go to oa.org and put in search and then put in service structure, you will see what we keep referring to as that upside down pyramid with the members on the individual member on the top and the EC and the managing director on the very bottom.
Concept 9, able trusted servants, together with sound and appropriate methods of choosing them, are indispensable for effective functioning at all service levels. Spiritual principle, ability. Trusted servants are vital to OA at all levels of service, and the methods for choosing them may vary, as do their jobs. Some jobs may require only a willingness to help. Others may require specific skills and abilities. These requirements need to be clearly stated prior to the selection of trusted servants. Conflicts may arise when a group fails to clearly define the abilities, past service, and abstinence requirements needed for a position. Connecting the pieces. Step 9 may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Tradition 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Concept 9. Able trusted servants, together with sound and appropriate methods of choosing them, are indispensable for effective functioning at all service levels. Spiritual principles, love, structure, ability. So 999, okay. Step 9 is so important to our recovery. And I know that when you first come into OA, you might have been like me and you thought, oh, that step 9 about making amends to people just sounded overwhelming. And I know that some people really put off that step and hate to do it. But what I feel is like if you do not make amends, if you do not sweep your side of the street, what's going to happen is you're going to be led right back to your food addiction. I can remember that my first amends that I made just kind of got brushed aside with kind of a hasty, like, oh, it's really okay, Francine. I don't mind that you did that. It's not a big deal. But actually, amends are big deals. It's the only way in this program that I know of that keeps my soul ready for that fit spiritual condition. And Tradition 9, well, I mentioned that earlier, I love that idea at first of not being overly organized. But I think early on, as I read that, it was kind of, well, don't worry. You're not organized, but I can help you with that. It still does amaze me that we can be so loosely organized in a way, and yet it works. It just works. We have all these lovely service boards and committees that do lots and lots and lots of work carrying the message. And yet, who are they responsible to? Not to themselves, but they're responsible to those they serve. I don't think, I just haven't figured out a way that I can seem to escape that when I serve others, what happens is it ends up helping me. It ends up helping me. It ends up helping my recovery. But all it just all works together so beautifully. And that concept nine, I know that trips people up sometimes. When we talk about able and trusted servants who we've chosen with, you know, various methods that are indispensable for functioning at all the levels of OA. Even, you know, if the person who's going to unlock the door doesn't show up at the meeting, well, you're not going to have the meeting, are you? And sometimes that idea of appropriate methods can trip us up. I'm going to do Gary now, like this might not be a popular view, but I'm going to ask, like, how many times have you sat at a meeting at either group level, intergroup level or beyond, and then no one raises their hand because the requirements for that position are such that no one meets them? And then what happens? Sometimes it's our tendency that we just dodge around those requirements. We think, well, this time it won't hurt. Some people are like, why do we have those requirements anyhow? Shouldn't anybody who wants to serve be able to serve? Or I've heard people say, well, gosh, those requirements seem pretty strict. Maybe they should be less. So this is when earlier I said I'd try to answer this question at this point. But my idea is, are we really doing good service when we don't follow our own self-set requirements? And sometimes the person stepping up to do the service position, they might be able to catch on. You know, sometimes they can and sometimes they can't, but that's what position that we're putting them in. And what about, you know, I think about like one of the requirements, one of the suggestions for coming to World Services that you first do service at a region level. And I've experienced where somebody raised their hand and came straight from intergroup to World Service and did a wonderful job. I've also experienced where somebody did that and they just weren't ready for world service yet, you know? So we didn't follow that suggestion, didn't work out well. And what about when we sadly decide that you know, Sally Service has done the position for the last 13 years. Why do we have to find someone else to do it? Wouldn't it be better if Sally just kept on doing it? She knows the position, she does it well. But what do we lose when we don't allow others to serve? Or what about Sam Service, who loves OA so much that he serves on 3 boards and is on 13 committees? The indispensable in that concept isn't that I'm indispensable. It's that together we serve to make OA run well. Summary. Trusted servants are not necessarily born. We become. Personal growth is the touchstone of OA's steps, traditions, and concepts. Despite never being organized, by clearly defined job responsibilities and position descriptions, and by agreeing to some baseline experience, prior service work, abstinence, length of time in OA, we allow for effective leadership and the opportunity for members to participate at all levels of OA service.
How do you apply it in your life, and how do you, can you give examples of that?
I think I gave some examples already, although some of them were kind of funny, but I do try to, if someone's going to be elected, and I think I said before, especially if it's like, a trustee or a treasurer or, you know, depending on the level of service, I feel it's really important that they meet those requirements. And how do I apply that? I don't apply for positions that I don't meet the requirements. You know, I once was asked to apply for something and I said, I'm sorry, I don't meet those requirements. And some, you know, so I said, oh, we'll just fudge them for you. And I was like, no, we won't. We don't do that in a way. It's a program of honesty. You know, so I do believe in that. And I do try to step back and let others do service. You know, I've been to the World Service Business Conference many times, and, you know, I've stepped back for a while because it's other people's turn to go and have that experience and that camaraderie and that fellowship.
In the ninth concept, you're asked for responsible methods of choosing the people you're going to work. Like, in one of my fourth steps, there was this girl, Sylvia, who really broke my heart. She really did something. We went to a party, a biker party. It was a biker thing. They were her friends. She was a biker chick. And we got to this party, and she started getting it on with two other guys in front of me. Oh, my God. Broke my heart. Tore me apart. But I picked Sylvia because she did crap like that. It's the same thing with trusted servants. You know, if I'm picking the cheapest plumber available and he does literally a crappy job, I can't be that surprised I chose the cheapest plumber. So it's asking me to be responsible in who I choose to do my service position. So if I'm choosing somebody who's unqualified simply because they're willing, that's on me. And that's true in my program, is true in my group, but it's also true. I need an animator for some OA service. If any of you know an animator, let me know. But I also need somebody who's good at it, not just somebody who's willing.
How do we convince others to do service at meetings? Some meetings are struggling to get service. How do you convince others to do service?
Well, I always start by asking people. And I always, when I ask people to do service, I also always tell them, I love you if you say yes, and I love you if you say no. So in other words, I want people to understand that, you know, because some of us can be people pleasers, you know. So I want people to understand, like, there's no attachment to that. You know, you can say yes or you can say no. One of the other things that we do, and we just started this in one of the virtual region committees, is if we didn't have somebody do the service, we ask people to try it out once. Like, will you try leading the committee this time and see, you know, see how that goes for you. See if you can do it. See it, you know. And oftentimes that just, you know, trying it out once, or just kind of walking with the person. So in essence, kind of like job shadowing. I found those all to be effective.
There are some people here in this meeting today who know me, and they will vouch for me when I tell you this. I am not the nicest guy in OA. Far from it. I'm really a pain in the ass with this service stuff. There are lots of people who see me walk into a room and they will walk out because they know what's coming. I will ask people to do service, and I ask them this way: there's this job that you'd be really good at and we could use you. I am of the belief that everybody in OA wants to do service. They just don't know it yet. And when we can marry the right person to the right service, it's a wonderful thing. And the term voluntold comes up a lot. I can't think of maybe two service positions I've ever had that I really volunteered for. Usually somebody calls me up and says, you should do this. I became a trustee on the third phone call. The third person called me up and said, do this. I did it. But it wasn't my idea. It wasn't my idea. I'm a great believer in that. I'm a great believer in telling people, listen, man, this is really for you and we need you and come do it. And I'm also good at, like, when they say I'm really busy, I know we're all really busy. But you had time to eat all night. You had time for that. Make some time for this. Anyhow, like I said, I'm pretty I'm more insistent probably than I should be.
Yeah, once in Region 3, I got a t-shirt from my other board members that said service pusher.
Virtual Region Treasurer wouldn't even get on an elevator with me in fear by the time she got off, everyone would have a different assignment. Would you have a member lead a meeting that was capable of doing it if they were only on step 3 in the fellowship?
Lead a meeting? Yeah, I would.
Do trustees get a mentor the first year to help them learn the ropes?
Yes, they do.
And they don't have to give up that mentor after the first year. We can keep them as long as they're around. Concept 10. Service responsibility is balanced by carefully defined service authority. Therefore, duplication of effort is avoided. The spiritual principle is clarity. That's great. Clearly and carefully defined written job descriptions allow members considering service positions to understand explicitly what is expected of them. By defining service authority, groups can avoid problems and controversy arising from misunderstood job responsibilities and multiple people doing the same tasks. Connecting the pieces. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Tradition 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. And Concept 10, service responsibility is balanced by carefully defined service authority, therefore duplication of efforts is avoided, and the spiritual principles of perseverance, neutrality, and clarity. Man, I could do a workshop on any one of these three. All three of these, I think, can be summarized in the phrase from the 10-step promises, we have ceased fighting anything and anyone. Because they're all about, really not fighting anymore. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I used to think this was just at the end of the day, looking back and seeing if I stepped on anybody's toes. But it's about continuing to take personal inventory. And see, like, when I first came in, this is true. When I first came into OA, I was not a gossip. I almost never gossiped. But after being here a while, I started hanging out with other old timers, or what we call long timers now, because we're also old. And don't tell anybody I told you this, but old timers tend to gossip. We pretend we're not. We pretend like we're, what do you think of so and so? Do you think they're going to make it? So and so needs help. We're really old timers gossip more than we. More than in my experience, more than we should. And eventually, I became a gossip, and I had to pay attention to this and learn to stop gossiping. But more than that, I really had to look at who I am and who I continue to be. That's the purpose of the inventory. And I also had to learn, the 10th step says we promptly admit when we're wrong, but it also says that we, need to forgive when the other person is wrong. And most importantly, something it doesn't say but implies is we don't get to throw it in their face when we're right. When we are right, we don't get to go, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. When people think about the spiritual steps, they think about three and 11, sometimes 7. But it's in the 10th step that the big book says we have entered the world of the spirit. And it's because the 10th step is spiritual because it's concerned with behavior. You know, if you're stealing my car, I don't care how many times you said own that morning. You know, like, you know, if you meditated all morning long and then you went out and robbed an old lady, you ain't that spiritual. I don't care. Even if like little things, if you, you know, if you said, oh, if you meditated for 20 minutes and then you parked in two parking spaces, what's up? You know, like, what's up? I have a friend, some of you know Kim G. She said this and it really knocked me on my butt. She said, if you're not living in 10 and 11, then you're using 12 as a drug. I'm going to repeat that because it affected me so much. If you're not living in 10 and 11, you're using 12, you're using service as a drug just to get high off of. 10 and 11 is about being clean and turning to God. And then you're in a position to do service. Tradition 10, have no opinion on outside issues, hence the ordinament never be drawn into public controversy. Thank God for this tradition. Like I said, I live in a country right now that's being kind of torn apart. I can't imagine how we would have survived this last year or two without this tradition. I have close friends who are on the other team. You know, I got to tell you, I don't wear sports paraphernalia to OA meetings. Like even during the Super Bowl or something like that, I won't wear a sports thing with like a sports name on it, because that alone can disrupt OA unity. You know, I'm from New York, and I remember being in a meeting with somebody wearing a Boston Red Sox hat, and it kind of pissed me off for a little while. You know, for those of you from other countries, that's like you don't do that. These are two teams that just hate each other, anyhow. These things are irrelevant to us. They're just, they're irrelevant to us. And we don't mean to get involved. In OA, though, this started a couple of years ago after the George Floyd murders. People would come to meetings and share, like, if you go to a meeting and you start lecturing about how bad racism is, that's an outside issue. But if you go to OA and you say, listen, all this upsurge in racism is scaring me and I'm afraid I might eat, that is very much an inside issue and you have every right to share about it. And if somebody tells you it's an outside issue, tell them they're wrong and keep sharing. And then finally, concept 10. Concept 10, I can tell you, works pretty well at World Service. Concept 10 works pretty well at World Service. My experience is we don't practice it enough at the intergroup level and at even at the regional level. We tend to run into a lot of conflict. Concept 10 means basically stay in your own lane. If you're on the PIPO committee, don't go running over to the convention committee to tell them how to do their job. And if you're on the convention committee, don't run over to the data committee and tell them how to do their job. Stay in your own lane. But in order to stay in your lane needs to be clearly defined. We need those those little white lines to tell you where your lane is. And that's up to the service board. They need to really define those roles. And most of the time when we have conflict within the service body, whether it's the region or the intergroup, it's because either those roles aren't defined or people are overstepping. I belong to a men's group that has a spiritual maxim that we repeat at every meeting. And it goes like this: mind your own effing business. And that's a harder thing to do than you think. But that's the heart of the 10th concept. In summary, the 10th step, tradition, and concept focus on self-awareness and managing our relationships within and outside OA. Avoidance of controversy is as important for OA as a whole as it is for the health of our individual service bodies. Service is essential to recovery. We provide more opportunities for service by encouraging members to perform a variety of activities over time. When we clearly define job responsibilities, we assure that necessary tasks are accomplished and that conflicts related to specific duties are avoided.
Why don't you answer how you apply this in your life?
I very rarely fight with anybody. There's very little worth arguing about. I love a good debate, but I just don't bring it into OA. And most of the time I learn what people in another fellowship tell you. I just say, you might be right, and I walk away.
I agree with that. I like that phrase of, yep, you could be right. Thank you.
How do I know which person, trustee, or region chair has the area of authority for the question I have, or do I get passed around until someone is found?
Bingo.
My experience is, at least on the Board of Trustees and in the virtual region and Region 8, that's where I was raised in Region 8, my experience is that none of the trustees, none of the chairs are that ego invested where if they don't know the answer, they won't send you to somebody who does. So you start with yours. Like if you're in whatever intergroup you're in, you'd go to your intergroup chair. Whatever region you're in, you'd go to your region chair and your region trustee, your regional trustee liaison. But like, for example, if somebody came to me and asked me a bylaws question that I didn't know, I would send you to Beverly. Who would know? Or to Bob, who knows the history of this stuff better than I do. Or, none of us are that ego invested in being the one, or because we don't like to just pass you on, I would write back to you and say, I don't know the answer. Give me a few days. I'll find out and get back to you. Then I would write Bob or Beverly or whoever, people I know who knew the answer, get the answer, and write back to you. I hope that answers your question.
Francine, could you answer if you are not involved at the intergroup level or you're with an unaffiliated meeting, how do you learn where your meeting is affiliated with so that someone would know where to go to start with?
You can go to the World Service Office and check, the registration of your meeting, and it will tell you who you're affiliated with. But in general, if you're geographic, you're affiliate, and you don't pick an affiliation, you get that geographic region. And if you're virtual, you get the virtual region. So it's pretty well defined how unaffiliated meetings get assigned. But if you don't know what intergroup you're affiliated with, you can also go on OA.org and it shows you who you're affiliated with.
And you explain how unity could be broken by not applying this concept in a group.
I think unity can be broken in groups sometimes by duplication of efforts or by this idea of like nobody knows what their job is because it's never been written down. So suddenly I'm doing something and I discover, that Gary's doing the same thing. We both thought it was part of our jobs. We didn't realize that we were duplicating efforts. So that idea that that we have, and I know it's always a pain whenever you get to that. I can remember in Region 9 when I first served there, we didn't have anything written down. And it was like confusing for me, like, well, what does everybody do? Who's responsible for this? Who's responsible for that? And so it is those clearly defined, service responsibilities that, and if you don't have that, you're running into people, you're running over people, and you're getting hurt feelings because somebody thinks, oh, well, look, and on the other hand, sometimes somebody accidentally steps into your area and gives you something that's a wonderful gift. So that happens sometimes too, but I do, that is one thing that OA sometimes frustrates me is that we don't avoid duplication of efforts. And then we keep doing the same, inventing the same wheel over and over. So I'm big about writing it down once you know how to do it.
I think in terms of groups, the bigger problem here in terms of concept 10 not being followed is, for example, you have somebody relatively new to the meeting who steps up and takes on the role to lead the meeting, and you give them the format. And they don't get it perfect. You know, they screw up a little bit. And usually some longtime member of the group is very eager to point out to them that they've screwed up, they missed something, or they put something in the wrong order, or whatever it is. This is what I mean when I was saying stay in your own lane. I think generally it's a good idea to let the leaders lead, even if they're getting it wrong. Now, sometimes it's a big, if it's something major, it's worth telling them. But I don't think it's a good idea to interrupt the meeting and correct the leader, and then it turns into an argument with the old-timer bleeding deacon about how the meeting's supposed to go and how it is going. No, shut up. Just shut up. let the leader.
How important is it? Count to 10, count to 10, and if necessary, count to 10 again before you decide, like Gary says, that you have to jump in there. I love that phrase too. We don't have any police. We don't have any OA police.
Let the leader lead.
How do you define affiliation to an intergroup? And if a group never sends a representative?
So in OA, this is one of those things that we do pretty much arbitrarily in some respects, is you become affiliated whether you want to or not. You can unaffiliate if you don't want to participate at certain levels, and you don't have to participate. And I guess part of that goes to autonomy of meetings. If they choose, you know, like, we just want our meeting, we don't want to do anything else. I would say, though, I think that the virtual region has a committee for intergroup outreach, and that's one of the things that they work on. And part of that is, well, you know, I love that idea of if someone's outside your circle, you just make your circle bigger to draw them in. And I think you have to show people why it's beneficial to them to be affiliated and to participate. And some people you'll never convert. There will be some outliers, but I think a lot of people, you know, it's because they don't know. Concept 11, trustee administration of the World Service Office should always be assisted by the best standing committees, executives, staffs, and consultants. Spiritual principle, humility. OA deserves effective and efficient service workers, similar to the realization that some members may need to look outside of our fellowship for help in their personal recovery. Concept 11 acknowledges that our service work may require assistance from people outside of OA who possess professional skills and talents not available within our groups. Getting qualified assistance may include the creation of committees or small focus groups, as well as the hiring of staff or consultants. Connecting the pieces. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Tradition 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. Concept 11, trustee administration of the World Service Office should always be assisted by the best standing committees, executives, staffs, and consultants. So when I first looked at these, I thought, well, these kind of seem pretty easy. Of course, we want the best staff. We want the best committees. We want the best executives, the best consultants, helping the best trustees administer the World Service Office. And when I thought about that, all I could come up with is, I actually think we do a pretty darn good job of that. But then we get to that tradition of anonymity, which I find is not always easy in these days. In our world of communications now, which just kind of brings us in an instant, with the quick little flick of a device, I'm in contact with what seems like the whole world. And then how do I attract rather than promote there? And how do I make sure that I'm watching that we all remain personally anonymous? And it seems like every time I'm listening these days, I'm a big podcast listener. I listen to it when I go on my walks. And most of them are 12-step podcasts. Some of them aren't, but it seems like I'm listening. And these days, it seems like everybody is talking about their recovery in a 12-step program. It seems to me almost as if personal anonymity has been transplanted by personal storytelling. And yes, some of those personalities have great recovery stories, and their telling may bring recovery, others to recovery programs. I don't know if that's true, but I assume it might be so. But it still just makes me cringe at this loss of anonymity at a personal level in the multitude of mediums available to us today. I don't honestly don't think, and I'm proud of the fact that I don't feel like this is as prevalent in OA as it is in some other 12-step areas, but I think it's something worth mentioning that we all want to be mindful of, you know, helping OA by attraction, not promotion. And then step 11. Well, step 11 for me is the foundation of all the traditions and concepts. I always want to be God-powered, not Francine-powered. When I am trusting God, cleaning house and serving others, then I'm serving in a way that works because God is involved. Serving in OA involves a lot of situations where I can be unsure, I can be lost, I can be wanting to do it my way, I can be critical, I can be judgmental. All of these character defenses that, you know, I'm asking God to take away, but they can come back out when I'm serving in OA. A wise sponsor taught me to always look for the spiritual solution in every situation. And when I stick to that, the steps, the traditions, and the concepts, they can be my blueprint for living a life in recovery and also for serving with sanity. For summary, the use of outside professional help or internal member-supported committees is important to the overall health of our fellowship. Committees are established to perform tasks in small focus groups. Many of these are specified in service board bylaws and OA bylaws, subpart B. Ad hoc or task-specific committees may be created at the discretion of a service body or the board of trustees. Under the leadership of the managing director, the staff of the World Service Office is hired based on knowledge and skills in relevant areas. Short-term needs may be fulfilled by consultants.
Someone's asking, is there a book that talks about how to apply the principles to our unmanageable lives? Or books.
It's interesting. When I first, I can remember, like, I want to say the first 2 years I was in recovery, and I just luckily hit some meetings that were really strong. I didn't know the difference at the time. And I can remember that they kept talking about practicing these principles in all our affairs. And I can remember finally at about 2 years saying, you know, just distractedly and aggravatedly at one of the people in that meeting, like, where the hell are all these principles that you keep talking about that I'm supposed to be practicing? I don't think there is a book. I do think that even though the big book teaches us all about the steps, as Gary said, you know, they weren't really into the principles when they wrote that, in the sense that we have one associated with everything now. Yet throughout that book are all the principles that we're supposed to be practicing. And for me, in essence, it's like, it's like I'm a grown up now, I'm in recovery, and how am I going to live my life? And am I going to live my life by these principles? So I don't think there's a book. I have a sponsee who emails me a principle every morning. You know, she does it to a group of us, and you know, we look at that principle and try to practice that one that day. You know, for a while I had the principles all listed out on little cards, and I would like pull out one for the day. And now I just find, you know, there's some I probably like better than others, and I practice better than others. And I also think that, you know, having some kind of spiritual growth in your life helps you to practice all those principles. No matter what that looks like for you, that helps me practice the principles. Gary?
I have a different answer. So excuse me for I'm contrarian. Bill Wilson referred to the big book as the book of experiences, and referred to the 12 and 12 as the textbook. And I think both 12 and 12s, I like our 12 and 12 better, but the two 12 and 12s, I think, are textbooks of how to apply these to our lives. The forward to the AA 12 and 12 says that the 12 steps are a group of principles which have practiced as a way of life, not have done once and then bragged about for 30 years, but a practice as a way of life will relieve the obsession to drink or to eat and enable the sufferer to live happily and usefully whole. So in that 12 and 12, at least, the steps are referred to as principles, which are to be practiced as a way of life. And everyone I know who has practiced them as a way of life has not just, they have gotten well and gotten happy. That's my answer.
I have a different answer that I need to jump in as, and not to be a commercial for OA.org, but I'm going to be. So we have a sponsorship kit, and in there, there's two pamphlets. And in one of the pamphlets, there's questions for all 12 steps. And I know this because I still use both of those pamphlets with my sponsees. And one of the questions is, how do we apply the steps and traditions in our daily life? And I make my sponsees reread each of the steps and traditions and answer that question. And then the other question is, how do we apply the spiritual principles in our lives in that sponsorship kit? And I make my sponsees reread all the steps and traditions and answer that question. I will also say there is a book on OA.org. There's a traditions workbook that asks questions in relation to applying the traditions and the principles in our lives. And that's on OA.org also, which has exactly these kind of questions in it. So both are really good tools for working through those. I didn't mean to be contrarian. I'm sorry. But
I don't think any of us were contrary. I think we just all have something different to add to the whole.
Okay. That's a good thing. What are the typical committees listed in the bylaws that seem to duplicate in regions and intergroups? And give some examples of ad hoc or task-specific committees.
I'm going to give one example, like for two examples right now. In the virtual region, we have an ad hoc tech committee. And also because of some wooky thing when we were doing our assembly, we didn't decide on a name of our translations and interpretations committee. And so they're considered an ad hoc committee right now. And World Service Office has had different ad hoc committees over the years on different things like that. When the plan of eating didn't get passed the first time, then they had an ad hoc committee. And then for all of the regular committees, you can go on to World Service and see what committees they have. And you can go on to the virtual region and see what committees we have. You can go on to Region 9 and see what committees they have. And as far as duplication, you know, hopefully we try to avoid that.
Concept 12. The spiritual foundation of OA service ensures that A, no OA committee or service body shall ever become the seat of perilous wealth or power. B, sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve shall be the OA's prudent financial principle. C, no OA member shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority. D, all important decisions shall be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible, substantial unanimity. E, no service action shall ever be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy. And F, no service committee or service board shall ever perform any acts of government, and each shall always remain democratic in thought and action. The spiritual principles, guidelines, selflessness, realism, representation, dialogue, compassion, and respect. The guidelines presented in the 12th concept bring to our service bodies and trusted servants the boundaries that give each recovering member of OA an approach to support our service positions. By focusing on the guidelines of selflessness, realism, representation, dialogue, compassion, and respect, OA continue to grow and support the compulsive eater who still suffers. And connecting the pieces. The 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. 12th tradition. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Concept 12. The spiritual foundation of OA service ensures that A, no OA committee or service body shall ever become the seat of perilous wealth or power. B, sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve shall be OA's prudent financial principle. C, no OA member shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority. D, all important decisions shall be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible, by substantial unanimity. E, no service action shall ever be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy. And E and F, no OA service committee or service board shall ever perform any act of government, and each shall always remain democratic in thought and action. The principles of service spirituality guidelines. Service spirituality guidelines. I get a little emotional when I ever talk about the 12th step or the 12th, any one of these three. And I have had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, as the result of these steps. And I try to practice these principles in all my affairs, and I try to carry the message. And if you ever asked what message to carry, the message we carry is that I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It's just, that's the message. When my sponsees come into the program, they ask me, you know, I ask them, do you want what OA offers? And they always say yes. And then I ask them, what does OA offer? And they always say, you know, weight or free of the obsession, that kind of thing. And what OA offers is a spiritual awakening. That's the, it tells you right there. You know, like, this is the result of working the steps, a spiritual awakening. All three of these, the step, the tradition, and the concept, are about a great manifest love. And that's the deal of the whole program. And these three things. 12th step, carrying the message. Bill Wilson refers to this as the joy of life. And for those of us who work the 12th step, we all know this. There is no greater joy than carrying the message of spiritual recovery from this dastardly disease. There's no greater joy than seeing, you know, the first time you do the third step with somebody and you're holding their hands and they meet God or their higher power on their own terms, and it's the first, and the tears come to their eyes and they start to cry. You know, I mentioned earlier that I come from an abusive family. When my mother was dying, she was jealous of my spiritual life. She wanted one for herself. But she, you know, I'm kind of multi, I'm into a lot of religions. I've recently become a Christian, like recently, like 5 years ago, but, I'm into a lot of spiritual stuff. But my mother said, I want what you have, but you won't like this because she goes, but it has to be Jewish. It has to be Jewish. She didn't want to mess around with anything else. So she was in her wheelchair. I held her hands and we did the third step together. And she turned her will and her life over to the care of God. This is not on her deathbed, but in the room where she would eventually die. Like I said, I come from an abusive family. When I was a kid, she once threw an iron at my head and it hit me like here, an inch this way, an inch that way. I could have died. I could have been blinded. You know, this is the heal. I didn't come to OA to heal my family, but this is what God did for me. I got to do a third step with my mother. How many men get that kind of experience in life? You know, carry the message to bring God into the life of others. It's just a beautiful thing. And this idea that same love is in the 12th tradition, because it's anonymity as practiced in the 12th tradition is different from the 11th tradition. The 11th tradition is very practical with anonymity. Anonymity in the 12th tradition is about humility. I used to think for the longest time that it was just about, you know, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I thought that meant I had to put up with people I don't like. I thought at every meeting, certainly there's at every business meeting, there's at least one person for whom I have to work at not rolling my eyes when they speak. You know, like there's one person where I have to go, Gary, don't roll your eyes. That's rude. It's like, I thought that's what the 12th step meant, the 12th tradition meant. And that's not what it means. It means that the personality that has to be sublimated is mine. It means that I have to put OA and ahead of my desires, my wishes, my personality. It means the good of the group comes first, and my humility. I have to grow in humility enough that I just recently made the biggest contribution to OA I've made in 36 years. Like six people know about it. Like six people know about it. It's a quiet, it's the kind of thing that happens not when your sponsee does well, but when your sponsee's sponsee does well. When you go to a meeting and you hear the speaker and the speaker is your sponsee's sponsee, and that person doesn't even know it's, you know, doesn't know that their sponsor is your sponsor. You know, like it's just that great feeling of knowing recovery is happening and you're in the ballpark, you're part of the team. You know, it's just, that's the 12th tradition. And that relates, and I'm not going to go through each of this, you know, the six things about the guidelines, because these guidelines, they are guidelines. But what the 12th concept assures is that we're all, as members, that we're treated with respect, that we are welcomed with love, that there's no punishment. There's no, like, you're a bad OA member, and therefore you can't do this. You know, we have had calls, Claire and I have had calls where we've been brought to meetings where they tried to kick somebody out of the meeting, where they tried to ban them. And you can remove somebody from a meeting if they're unsafe, if they're obviously, this is a playground where boys and girls play together and stuff happens. And you have a right to protect your group and to keep it safe. But there were things where they didn't like the way somebody was doing service and they didn't like the way they were leading the meeting. So they tried to ban them forever from doing service. And, punitive things where we want to punish the other teams. We don't do that here. One of the nice things about OA, and any of us who have relapsed and come back and tell you this, one of the nice things about OA is we do not shoot our wounded. And just the opposite. When they walk in the door and they're limping in there and they're scarred and they're bleeding, we hug them, we welcome them, we tie up their bandages and we love them as best we can, heal them back into recovery. And all of that is part of the 12th concept. What I wanted to say, I guess, about the 12th concept is it really is about treating each other with love and respect, making sure that we're all okay. Our 12 and 12 says that anonymity is the spiritual foundation, not just of our traditions, but of our transformed lives. It is the indication of the growth and humility that we went from when we come in as these ego-driven, selfish, self-centered beings to these humble, caring, loving creatures that we've become something else. I don't know what it's like for you. I know that aside from physically, I am virtually unrecognizable in terms of my personality from who I was to who I am. I have been transformed by living this way of life, this 12-step, 12 tradition and 12 concept way of life. This is much bigger than anything I could have hoped for. Sometime I would love, if you ever have the opportunity to read in terms of humility and in terms of anonymity about Bill's relationship to the Lasseter Award, which is at the end of the big book, or Dr. Bob, the story of Dr. Bob's death. God, that's such a humbling and moving story. In summary, the 12th concept, with the 12th concept, we come full circle. OA is a spiritual fellowship based on a belief that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity, not only regarding our issues with food, but in all areas of our lives. The spiritual foundation, which includes the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts, extends to our personal lives and all facets of service experience. These concepts are ideals that support the principles found within them and in concert with the steps and the traditions, provide guidelines, selflessness, realism, representation, dialogue, compassion, and respect for the growth that recovery brings. And thank you again.
I guess there's a question about how does this concept help unity?
The whole point of this concept really goes back to the first tradition, in that OA is governed, if this bothers anybody, I apologize, but it's governed by a loving God or a loving higher power, if you prefer that term. And this concept brings down to practical to the practical level in terms of our behavior with one another, how we treat one another, what that means in terms of the running of OA, what it means to be have its only governing authority be a loving God. So this concept talks about how that's brought down to earth, but it really does bring us back to this unifying idea that the only real authority here is a loving God, as I don't know God's pronouns, but as it they, whatever, you know, God expresses God's self in our group conscious.
I think it goes along also with in the big book where it tells us love and tolerance are our code. And that's what this concept expresses to me is that we're loving and we're tolerant.
Someone's asking is, how can you handle a concept 12 violation on a committee meeting?
Have they become the seat of perilous wealth and power?
That's the question that was asked.
I would tell you that all of the steps, all of the traditions and all of the concepts are ideals, and we do our best to live up to them. And there are people who either intentionally or unintentionally screw them up. And if somebody is doing something of, we do have meetings, at least in the virtual region, that we are aware of that are clearly violating the 12th concept. They have been personally punitive, and they are undemocratic in thought and action. Claire and I have visited these meetings and spoken to them. My belief is, like I said before, this seems to be something of a self-cleaning oven. That is, these meetings will either change or they will fold. But until then, all we can do is pray for them or get together with our friends and go, tisk, 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 what a shame, which is tends to be what we do. But basically pray for them. Like I said before, there was an AA meeting that served beer. It's a sad thing, but it happens.
Question had to do with committees. Is there something different that can be done on committees?
If you're on a committee that's either part of, let's say it's part of an intergroup or part of a region or part of World Service, the same thing we said before is you would go to, if it's part of an intergroup committee, you would speak to the chair of the intergroup. And if that didn't work, you would talk to the chair of the region and so forth. There's always somebody you can appeal to. That doesn't mean you will get your way, but there's always somebody you can appeal to who will at least hear and bring your issue forward. Bring your issue to be make sure it's discussed.
And I just would want to add, you can also always bring it to the attention of the committee or the group at first and try to resolve it through group conscience before you bring it to the next level. I think that's the end of our questions. I want to really thank Gary and Francine, all the service people today that help with security and screen sharing and chat monitoring, and our interpreters. I'm sure it was exhausting today. This was a long workshop. And everyone for coming here, because coming here was a commitment to service. This wasn't about, this is about carrying the message, and I thought it was awesome.